create a home that reflects who you are and inspires you to become the person you want to be? Where do you start? What are the steps you can take? And how do you learn how to be creative and put that creativity into practice inside your home? If these are questions you're interested in answering, you're in the right place because right here, every week, we talk about ways to improve your life by paying attention to the spaces you're living in. So welcome to the Style Matters podcast, brought to you by Little Yellow Couch. I'm Zandra, your host, and I'm excited to share with you my slow style approach to creating a home you love, along with some really inspiring interviews with some of the best designers working in interiors. I'm delighted to share this episode with you. I'm having a conversation with one of my favorite fabric and wallpaper designers, Mally Skok, and she's also a really fabulous interior designer. Originally from South Africa and now living in the States, actually near me in Boston, as it turns out, Mally has just written a gem of a book. It's called Mally's Little Handbook, A Guide to Finding Your Joy Through My Designer Eyes. Without knowing it was going to happen, what we ended up talking about so closely aligned with my slow style approach, I feel like Mally could be the spirit animal of the slow style philosophy. She's just so delightful. I cannot wait for you to get started with me here. I think you're going to see what I mean. Mally Skok, welcome to the Style Matters podcast. I have a feeling this is going to be a really fun conversation.
Good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
Good. Wonderful. So before we dive into your book, you have one of the best fabric and wallpaper designs lines that I have seen out there. I am truly in love with everything that you've done. And I also love your work as an interior designer. So I want to talk a little bit about that first, if that's all right.
That's great. And thank you. That's very kind of you.
Well, the patterns are, they work so well together, the mixing and the matching and the layering of them. But I just really love them. And I have a feeling that a lot of it comes from your travels. Your inspiration comes from your travels.
My childhood.
Oh, I want to talk about that too.
Yes. And I think I just knew right from the beginning that being such a lover of other people's fabric and design, I had to stay in my own lane and try my best not to be influenced by other people because I'm very spongy. I change direction. I love everybody's ideas as well. So I don't really read that many interior design books per se because I don't like that feeling of, oh, look how good that is. And I'm so dreadful. I can't do that. You know, we do this to ourselves.
Well, it's good to hear someone such as yourself still has those thoughts because the rest of us who are just kind of doing it for our own homes, for our own pleasure, we often feel that way, especially when we look at the really high-end magazines.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And people that are really cool, especially the young upcoming designers. Right. And I'm like, oh, I'm so South Kensington, really. But anyway, I think I'm very influenced by being a South African because you probably have met South Africans. We have wanderlust South Africans.
Oh, okay. Yes,
we
I do know some South
travel.
Africans.
We travel.
I love it.
So from, you know, a young age, my parents took us to Europe.
Yeah.
And it wasn't really fancy. We'd go and stay in Switzerland to ski at Christmas time.
Nice.
So being an observer, a noticer, as I call it, my surroundings always fascinated me. Mm. You know, from these funny Swiss chalets that we stayed in, B&Bs, to the London hotels in Knightsbridge, never very fancy. But South Africans are like that. They don't need fancy. They just want new experiences and a new view of the world.
I love that. That's such a great way to go through life. The other.
It is. It is. And I think it's catching on in America, especially amongst creatives. Now that people see, Instagram, social media, it does a good job. It sort of whets the appetite of people.
Yes, it does.
To go and experience things.
It definitely creates wanderlust for sure, because the photos are so gorgeous and you think, oh, I've never seen anything like that before. Where in the world is that? I must go.
It's so good for us. It really is. And it's also, you know, just takes you away from that homogenized view that, unfortunately, the Americanization of the world has happened. And to find a little outlier, a little funny house, you know, a hovel in Scotland. And we just all drool over those photographs because they aren't tainted at all by, you know, anything else. Just they're just themselves. And that's what I love. That's my real love, is just that authentic message that people give without looking over their shoulder at all.
Right. They are of their place. They are of that. And I liked, I feel like that's what your designs really express. They really take the essence of something that inspired you and then you distill it and then come up with sort of a repeating pattern that just...
You're right. That's my...
So much life.
My repeat of those things that resonate with me. And I think it comes from a very female-centric upbringing. My dad died when we were young, and my mom was really a young woman. She was 32 years old.
Oh,
so
wow.
We got on with it. And because there was no man around to say, don't be ridiculous, you can't, you know, eat that for a dinner party. We did, you know, we had dinner parties with spaghetti bolognese, and we...
I love it.
My mum made her own curtains. And when you've had a big obstacle like that in your life, the other ones are so small. I kind of wrote that book because my mum handed down to us as children this attitude, you know, nobody's going to get hurt if the lasagna isn't absolutely perfect. And it's such a good way forward. I know, without always market testing all your ideas.
your whole book is very freeing in that it is decidedly, purposefully not a step-by-step how-to design book. It flies in the face of that. It is saying that you can do this. You can figure out what you find, what you think is beautiful, and put it together.
Yes.
And
I don't want it. I didn't want it to be a lecture.
Right.
I just hate those lists, those 10 reasons why you can't paint your room yellow this winter or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, people take it as on face value. And
As gospel.
As gospel. And especially all that, you know, edit, throw away your stuff. That really drove me absolutely mad, because it's so unenvironmentally friendly. Because how many times do you throw away things only to jump on Instagram and buy them again? Because, you know, the garbage man has just taken away that very thing that you thought you didn't need.
I find that same thing happens when you go, you drop something off at Goodwill or the thrift store.
Yes.
And then you go directly to Target and you just buy more of the same. It's such a horrible loop.
It's so bad. It's ugly, actually. The ugly side of consumerism, because I'm very thoughtful about my purchases without, you know, especially holding myself back or anything. I think if you really carefully buy things that you love, you can keep them forever.
Well, I think you've really hit on something that's very important that you certainly talk about in the book, especially in your chapter on going to thrift stores or antique shops. Mm-hmm. And it's knowing yourself. Mm-hmm. You have to know yourself so well in
trust
order to know what you love.
Well.
Yes, yes, so that you can trust yourself. I think that, that because people get so overwhelmed, especially by, let's say, a large antiques fair.
You need to really, really look at the world very closely to find out what you like. It's so interesting how people don't know, you know, what their favorite thing is, because
right.
it takes time to, it's a gift that you give yourself to sort of be walking along and say, I really love white flowers.
Right.
You know, lots of people don't file those things away. And, you know, this week you can love white flowers and next week you can be bored of them because they're on everyone's blog or whatever. But it's the consideration. It's giving yourself the permission to just spend a bit of time to think about what makes you happy, you know, visually. Mm-hmm. Just spending some time on yourself like that. People just rush through life without gifting themselves that little moment.
It is such a gift. And I think this concept of taking your time, it's something that I feel very strongly about and very passionate about. I call it slow style. And I think that it's that crucial bit that makes our homes really feel like us.
Absolutely.
And you say in your book, in fact, if we're honest, learning to love and share your house and table takes time. So does learning to love ourselves. I'm quoting you from the book. And I think almost that kind of way of creating a home is almost a form of self-care.
It is, definitely.
I know that's a word that gets tossed around a lot now.
I know.
But.
Well, I mean, I feel that when I walk into my house, you know that exhale? Like when you've been traveling and you've been in a lovely hotel or whatever, but you're home.
Yes.
And you are in your space that is meaningful to you.
I'm just going to jump in here for a second before we continue with the conversation. I want to make sure you know about one of the ways I can help you out when it comes to your home. One of the frustrations I hear the most is about not knowing what your style is. You want to take a fun quiz and get an answer. I get that. You're looking for a starting place, or maybe you're having trouble mixing it all together, especially when you've got a lot of different styles that you've accumulated over the years. If this sounds like you, please go to our website, littleyellowcouch.com, and download our free style guide to get some help. In it, you'll see that you don't have to lock yourself into one particular style category to create a cohesive feeling. What you need is a new working definition of your unique style. I call the free guide the style mashup because no one style is going to reflect all of who you are. So let's throw that idea out and start looking at our homes a different way. You can easily find the free guide on our website, littleyellowcouch.com. All right, let's get back to the conversation.
You know, I admire really edited, tight interior design that looks like the interior designer has just left the building. And some people want to live like that.
Right.
You know, they want to live a decluttered life.
Yes.
But I think they're missing something. To be surrounded by your choice of things that's what makes a nest, a cocoon.
A nest, yes. I wonder if the reason why there's this trend of decluttering and minimalism, because what we've put in our homes is stuff that isn't meaningful. And so therefore, we want to get rid of it. But then you're saying, okay, but then bring in the meaningful things. Don't just leave it bare.
And I think I said in the book, you know, your gran will give you something from her dressing table. And it's really, you know, you would never, ever buy it.
Right.
But you put it on your desk and, you know, it's just a little, it's a touch point of who you are. Yes. And where you come from. It's so, I don't want to live a life with that eradicated at all. I know that it makes some people feel that there's chaos outside, and so they want this calm interior.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that they're achieving. I don't know if it's that calming to be in a cell, you know.
Or if it's that I'm not sure that that's the answer, right? That chaos doesn't necessarily need to be answered by.
Yeah, it's still there.
Minimalism, right? And it's still there, right? Yeah. I agree. Like surrounding yourself with beauty and meaningful objects.
Yeah, meaningful.
I love your word touch points. That's really lovely. So okay, we talked about taking your time, which is definitely something I wanted to touch on, but also this idea of being a noticer.
Yes.
And I love your word for it. I love noticer as a word. But
my children coined that word.
It's so sweet.
And anyway, I think they were being a little bit mean, but it's a good word.
It is a good word. Sometimes our children know us better than anyone else.
Yes, exactly.
But it's... What I love about it, and I love how much attention you give to it, because you talk about it not just in your book, but you talk about it on your website as well, is that it's something that one could skip over so quickly, because noticing sounds that it's something that you don't really take in. And yet you mm-hmm. really talk about it as a sponge-like way of being. So tell us more about the power of it.
I had a couple of years in my life which were difficult. Coming to the end of a marriage, having small children, not wanting to break their heart, not wanting to upset the apple cart, but thinking about my future and sort of, is this it? All those questions. And I realized that during those years, and I was married to a wealthy guy, and you know, we traveled and we had an amazing time. And I thought, oh, I missed so much of that movie because I was thinking about, oh, you know, how am I going to get through the next dinner party? Oh. I was having all that negative thought that takes up too much of your brain.
Yeah, right. So you couldn't enjoy, you're saying you couldn't enjoy your travels because...
You can't sop it up because you're always thinking about doing the right thing or fixing.
Mm.
And I know some people are, you know, in a bind and can't really fix their life that much. And it's not a judgy thing. It's just give yourself a little bit of space to just see the world around you. Just stop, pull over the side of the road and see that damn sunset. You know, even if you're going to be 2 minutes late for your dinner.
Right.
And that was part of I sort of saw the reader as a friend and, you know.
That's how I felt reading the book. I mean, you're so personable, but it just felt like a good friend was giving me some life advice. I mean, just really, you know, I'm sitting with a cup of tea reading your book and the illustrations are so beautiful and it just made me
Sally
feel
and
good.
I really, we connected so well. She's a very thoughtful person and she's flourished and I have really, really been able to tell my audience exactly what I'm saying without being judgy in any way.
Oh,
so that's
absolutely.
Why I didn't have photographs.
Oh, interesting. I was wondering why you didn't. Yes. I mean, I love the illustrations. The illustrations to me are, they reflect the tone of your voice. That's how I took it.
I think she got that. And also, I like the fact that you can imagine yourself in those illustrations rather than, and I know that I have a privileged life and I don't ever want any of my readers to feel intimidated by, you know, what my table settings look like, because I bought my plates in Italy, but you don't have to buy your plates in Italy, you know.
Right.
You can be clever at Home Goods and find really great plates.
Right.
So I didn't want anyone to feel, you know, set aside from the message of the book. And that's why I chose illustration.
Oh, that's a brilliant choice. Absolutely. I want to talk about your work as an interior designer as well. And I specifically, when I was looking at photos of the work that you've done, what I noticed was, well, you've sort of said it earlier, it doesn't look like a designer just walked out the door. In other words, not everything was bought all at once, and it wasn't, it's hard to describe. It looked like real people lived there, and I find that to be a little bit rare lately among interior designers that you know, email me, they want to be on the show.
I let my clients keep their things as much as possible, because, you know, it's very hard to order a sofa these days. So I have for a while been an advocate for, you know, a good upholsterer can change the arm if it's very old fashioned and clumpy looking into something more elegant. And, you know, just when you think of the amount of resources that goes into the frame of a sofa.
Yes.
So I have always, I think that must be my background as well, encouraged people to, you know, incorporate that it doesn't matter that ugly hall chair that your aunt gave you. You can put really fun fabric on it. And that I think that's also English designers are very much like that. If I, you know, they don't toss anything out. They keep their things for life. And trends happen and they change the color of the room or, you know, pillows. Lighting is always a very, it's a way to really date a room if you don't update lighting.
Yes, yes, good point.
You know, but lamps, so easy. And, you know, bad old brass light fittings, so easy to get rid of those.
Right.
And then just keep the core of who your client is, really.
And how do you, and I know this is really hard to explain because it's so intrinsic to who you are, but how do you take a room with a lot of the same objects that they've already had, or maybe they're coming from other rooms in the house, and make it feel cohesive, even though you haven't brought a whole lot of new things in?
I always think that the best thing to start with is something that they absolutely adore.
Okay.
So whatever it is, whether it's a rug or a paint color, that's such a positive place to start assembling the rest of the room. From that place of positivity. And then, you know, designing with people in the Northeast is tricky because they want to get it right. Because
yes, there's an obsession with that.
They've gotten A their entire lives. And, you know, all their kids went to Harvard. And now, oh, my God, they might make a mistake. So they sometimes try to, like, unravel the whole process three quarters of the way through just because they're so worried that they haven't made the right decisions. And then I have to walk them back and explain where we started from and all the things that got eliminated rather than added. Like we thought stripe would be good, but remember, we tried it and it was too much or whatever. So it's more the taking out and then what you're left with, those choices, the positivity of those choices. It's, you know, it's, you have to be very, very kind and caring to be an interior designer.
Oh, oh, Well, you really are. I mean, this is people's souls represented visually, right? I mean,
yes.
Hopefully, that's the goal.
It's very emotional. It's very emotional for people. It brings out the best and the worst in humanity.
Right. And relationship issues. You probably do a little marriage counseling.
I can hear the husband's voice in the background of the emails. But you have to understand that for some people, this is a struggle. You know, they've never actually put themselves out there, especially in the Northeast. Like, I once walked into a prospective client's house, and they literally still had these Adirondack chairs that they'd had in their student apartment.
Oh, wow.
And that they were, because they just couldn't make a decision that they considered to be the right move.
Yeah, they're paralyzed. It's
totally paralyzed, and sort of almost have never lived in comfort. So they don't know what they're missing. So they almost fine carrying on like that. Mm. And then the kids arrive and then they're just toys all over the place.
Right.
And I mean, these are actually civilized people that stay in, you know, the Four Seasons, but they just haven't experienced living in a comfortable environment before. And then when they cross the chasm,
mm-hmm.
they're just so shocked that they love their houses so much.
Yes, you know? And what an impact it can have. I think that we get used to seeing whatever we slapped up when we first moved in. We get used to seeing it.
You do.
It kind of fades into the background, and then you don't realize it's sucking the energy right out of you.
You do. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, humans are very adaptable. You can kind mm-hmm. of get used to anything.
Before I ask you about why style matters, I wanted to kind of wrap up our discussion of your book with the words from your mom at the end of your book. You would be going out as kids. You'd be going out to a party or school or something, and she would call out, "Be enthusiastic."
Yes, she would.
I mean, that cracked me up, and I love it because it's actually very good life advice, because when you are, and you say this in the book, when you are enthusiastic, you attract positive energy to you.
It is infectious. If you voice your enthusiasm, other people chime in.
They do.
It's just like if you talk about some real things about yourself. Like my middle daughter had some difficult years. And in the UK and in South Africa, you will share with your friends to get their energy back. You know, like, I'm having a hard time, you know, we're having to do some tricky things. And people are like, oh, that's awful. Can we help? Let me tell you about this person or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But people were so shocked in the beginning when I shared. And then afterwards, somebody would come to me and say, you know what? My son is having a really hard time at the moment. And I found that gave other people permission to also be honest with the rest of the group.
Yes.
You know, someone's got to start it.
I 100% agree. It's this, why do we have to pretend to be perfect and that we are the perfect family with everything going gangbusters? I mean, yes,
it makes it so isolating for other people, really.
Right. Yeah. And then you're missing a connection. You're missing an opportunity for a connection. So I love that. Be enthusiastic.
Yeah.
What a wonderful ending to your book, too.
Yes, exactly. Oh, my darling mother. She
your fabric, your wallpaper, it's all very enthusiastic. It's so fitting.
It is. And, you know, I never went to school to learn any of this. Honestly, the way I make patterns is with my printer. Uh-huh. I mean, the honest to goodness cut and paste on my hands and knees. Well, I'm sure that's where cut and paste started.
Yeah, I'm sure it did. That's absolutely right.
That's probably why my fabrics have a little bit of naivete attached to it, because it's my hand. It's my brain. But I chose that purposefully because, you know, if you want beautiful, sophisticated fabrics, there's Robert Keim just waiting for you to buy his fabric out
right,
there.
Right, right. Oh, yes. Well, I love that we can see your hand in it. That's what I'm drawn to.
Oh, thank you.
So, Mally.
Yes.
Why does style matter?
Is there anything more precious than to live in a comfortable environment that makes you exhale? You have to find your style first, whatever it is, before you can surround yourself with that sort of those fabrics, those just objets, you know, whether it's you like modern things or if you like beat up old furniture or a mix of the two. You have to figure out for yourself what it is that makes your brain happy. And that takes a bit of time. And I don't think it's a money thing at all. I think it is just giving yourself permission to figure out what a comfortable environment for you is, and then having the confidence to just do it.
Well, and that brings us back to noticing. I mean, your book is very circular. Like, everything is interconnected, all of these lessons, these life lessons, right? I mean, it comes back to noticing to figure out what it is you love.
And I think what I really hope is that even if it's just one little thing, I don't mind if people reject some of my suggestions and say, oh, that sounds like tosh. But I would love it if people could just slow down a little bit and just kindly allow themselves the time to, you know, we only come around once. Figure out if you like, you know, you really, really like yellow rooms or whatever. That was the purpose of the book, is to just enable my reader to just have the confidence to be kind to themselves and choose, you know.
Yes.
You have to choose.
You have to start choosing, right?
Yeah. People just hate to choose. I don't know what that is. But that's the only way you're going to end up with style. Your style is to make some choices. Sorry.
Yes. Well, you have empowered us to begin. Mally, this has been such a lovely conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. It was just a really, really great talk, and I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
Thanks for listening. If you're looking for more info on this episode, things like photos, links, my own takeaways from the conversation, I'm happy to say that we've just given our website a refresh. When you go to littleyellowcouch.com, click on podcast at the top, and then just click on an episode, and you'll see the show notes page with all of that extra stuff. And while you're at littleyellowcouch.com, you can also learn more about my slow style philosophy when it comes to decorating. You can take a tour of my home, get info about our monthly membership, the Slow Style Society, which, by the way, will be opening its doors again in December. And of course, download the free style guide so you can get started working on your dream home today. Okay, that's all for now. Have a great week.